JC Corcoran Podcast.
I've used every swear man. I've used every swear man. Across the desert, fair man. In the mountain, air man. Cause I'm like I got no cares, man. I've used every swear. I've used cocksucker, motherfucker, asshole, shit sucker, dick wad, fuck wad, shit dick, ass prick, blowjob, cock drop, bitch ass, nut job, pen dick, big prick, suck dick, ass shit, ass back, bag head, cum lick, dirt bag, dog, fuck, non croc, stink, puss job. I've used every swear, man. I've used every swear, man. Cross the desert, fair man. In the mountain, air man. Cause I'm like I got no cares, man. I've used every swear. I've used ass, wife, ass, clown, bumble, fuck, chick, clown, chicken, chuffer, clown, fuck, cum, bubble, cum, fuck, dick, face, dipshit, douchebag, fuck, wet, ass, rag, dick, smack, cock, butt, clip, hat, hoochie, mama, fucking head, fuck, tar, dick, head, punk, ass, jack, shit, butt, ranger, dick, lick. I've used every swear, man. I've used every swear, man. Cross the desert, fair man. In the mountain, air man. Cause I'm like I got no cares, man. I've used every swear. I've used ass blast, ass friend, ass breath, ass white bean flick, butt munch, candy ass, butt white, chicken chick, cock, holes, a cunt, sucker, dick, brain, dick, wad, dick, head, dick, munch, dick, pain, dumb, fuck, fart, knuckle, fuck, a bitch, fuck, head, fuck, base, fudge, fucker, jizz, mop, a whole back. I've used every swear, man. I've used every swear, man. Cross the desert, fair man. In the mountain, air man. Cussing like I got no cares, man. I've used every swear. I've used cocksucker, motherfucker, asshole, shit sucker, dick wad, fuck wad, shit dick, ass prick, blowjob, cock drop, bitch ass, nut job, pen dick, big prick, suck dick, ass shit, ass back, fag head, cum lick, dirt bag, dog, fuck, non croc, stink, puss job. I've used every swear, man. I've used every swear, man. Cross the desert, fair man. In my underwear, man. Cause I'm like I got no cares, man. I've used every swear. Oh, I've used every swear.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Tuesday, June 14th, 2022. 150 days remaining in our American democratic system of government as we have known it. You are at jcontheline.com. COVID ain't done, folks. COVID ain't done. I think it's remarkable that neither me, my wife, my daughter, none of us got it, but my daughter who lives in Kentucky got COVID, and she said it was like swallowing razor blades for about 2 days. Well, now the people directly across the street from us, I would probably say out of all of our neighbors, we have our best and closest relationship with them, and early last week, she tests positive and she gets sick. And then a couple of days later, her husband got it. And then the dog got it. And I wasn't even sure that they proved that it was transmissible to pets, but it sure is because the dog is actually very sick. So that ain't no damn good. Man, I'm telling you, if one of your pets is sick, if you're like me, it's almost worse than if one of your kids gets sick. At least your kid can tell you what's wrong. They can verbalize stuff, but, you know, the poor animal is wondering what's happening to it and can't tell you what's wrong, can't tell you how bad it is, can't tell you when it starts feeling better, although you would just watch that tail on a dog. Cats, for obvious reasons, are much more difficult to get a read on, but you had a very young child. I remember my first daughter got the flu when she was about 11 months old, and she was just learning to walk right about that time, and she had to spend the night in the hospital with her arms strapped to one of those boards with an IV in it because she was dehydrating. And you do things that you didn't think you were capable of doing, like staying up all night with a, you know, with a sick kid. And the weird thing was that it upset her so much that she came out of the hospital after 2 days, and she ended up not walking for months. It was almost like everything in terms of her ambulatory ability, her ability to just get up and walk around, was stymied and somehow derailed by this incident in the hospital. It was really weird. The problem today is not going to be COVID. It is going to be the heat again, and it gets real complicated today because the Cardinals have a day-night doubleheader. This day game is the rescheduled game from a rainout earlier in the season, although last night, you know, hot out there. You know, Ollie Marmol almost lost this game for the Cardinals last night because you've got a rookie pitcher out there who hasn't been seeing regular work, and it feels like 130 out there. He's into the fifth inning. It is hotter than hell. He's thrown a lot of pitches. They are just shelling him, and they don't even have anybody in the bullpen. Nobody's up in the bullpen. What are you trying to prove by doing that? If not for the heroics of Dylan Carlson for the tie and Paul Goldschmidt for the win, I don't know how that game would have turned out, but Ollie Marmol did everything he could to lose it. 7-5 the final, we win. We're up a full game now on the Brewers. If you were paying attention last night, the game between the Cubs and the Padres at Wrigley last night was delayed. I think it was about 90 minutes because they had a tornado warning at Wrigley Field. Not a watch, a warning. There was a freaking tornado. Didn't help the Cubs. They ended up losing anyhow. Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa, Colorado, tomorrow night. Do you know we're less than 2 months away from the first NFL preseason game? I'm not ready for that. Not ready for that. Dog got COVID. Oh, last night at the Cardinal game, and I apologize in advance because there's something wrong with I got a bad connection or something here. I got to investigate this after the show today. But anyhow, yesterday morning, if you remember, I said, you know, Chris Rock played in St. Louis on Saturday and Sunday night. I think it was at Stiefel. And he's on the plane back to wherever he's going. Well, I was wrong about that because last night he popped up at the ballpark. And roving reporter Jim Hayes tracked him down.
You just played St. Louis. What do you think of our city?
I love St. Louis. Great crowds, great food. Yeah, I always catch a Cardinals game while I'm in town. Like, they draw so well. I guess you like 100 home games. Everybody else gets 80.
Yeah, we get more home games because we draw. Now, you were kind of rattling off some of the Cardinal greats because you said your dad, like, was a big Gibson fan, so you knew all the Cardinal greats.
I mean, I you know, you got your, you got your Ozzie Smiths, you got your Gibsons, you got your Willie McGee's, you know, Al Herbosky. Wasn't Al Herbosky?
We work with Al.
Yeah.
The Mad Hungarian.
The Mad Hungarian is one of my favorite players, yes.
I can't wait to tell him that. Now, you didn't rattle off any pirate names, but that's okay.
You know, you got your Stargells and Rennie Stennett's and Bonillas and Bonzes. You know, they got a couple of guys. Sterling Martel, who's now currently a Met, you know.
We got it. All right. So what I'm wondering about you, Chris, is the onstage persona.
Right.
Is that who you are? Like when you're home in your pajamas, maybe got slippers on. What's Chris Rock like when he's home on his own time?
Well, you know what? I got daughters 20 and 18, so some dad for now. They're kind of out of the house, so I'm trying to figure out who the hell I am at this point.
Who do you think you are?
Like a little Homer Simpson / George Jefferson, you know, a little mixture of the two.
Wanted to ask you about, you're on tour right now, summer yes. tour, and you know, baseball players play a lot of games, right? And there's a grind to it. I would imagine as a comedian playing city after city. Now, you're not flying Southwest. You got a private jet. There's a grind to it, right?
East-West. There's a grind to it. Yeah, today I actually have an off day. But, yeah, I do a show. I probably do 5-6 shows a week, hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. Yeah, and you got to wake up. You got to work out, and you got to eat right, and you got to stay hydrated, and you got to read the paper, work on your jokes. Yes, it's not a big difference.
Last thing, what's a Chris Rock workout like?
What's a Chris Rock workout?
I mean, are you like just walking on the treadmill while they hand you grapes? What is?
Yeah, a little walking on the treadmill, a little, yeah, some weight.
You are eating gummy bears. I would imagine maybe someone's handing you gummy
bears. Yeah, gummy bears, protein shakes, you know. get it in. I'm in decent shape.
You look great, and I appreciate you spending a few minutes with us.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, you just made the whole broadcast because you're here.
Wow, thank you. Now, let's hope we can, Cardinals can get some runs here.
Go Cardinals.
Go Cardinals.
That's a good place for you to take it, Danny.
I love it.
Chris Rock's a really friendly guy. I had the opportunity to interview him a couple of times, and because of the way he is on stage and in movies, you think to yourself, I'm not sure what this is going to be like, but he's really actually a very friendly guy, as you just heard right there. And again, I apologize. I got to get this thing fixed. It's driving me nuts. Oh, back to COVID again. Sorry about that. Hugh Jackman, just Sunday night, performing on stage at the Tony Awards. He's got COVID. This is his second time, and now it turns out the Stones had to cancel the show in Amsterdam because Jagger has COVID. How old is Mick now? Is he 78? Hold on. How old is Mick Jagger?
Mick Jagger is 78 years old.
I'm good. I am really good. By the way, last night on Jeopardy, a contestant was shown a picture of Michael Caine and identified him as Mick Jagger. I'm not sure who comes out worse in that. Charlie Sheen's 18-year-old daughter joined OnlyFans. He's not happy. He blames her mom, who, of course, is Denise Richards. I got a couple of friends who are doing that. They're doing, a lot of, mostly softcore, but some actual porn on OnlyFans. They say I run with the dangerous crowd. James Corden going back to the UK to be closer to his family after he finishes hosting the Late Late Show next spring. So I don't know that a lot of people are going to miss him. Joan Jett calling on SeaWorld to stop forcibly impregnating dolphins and beluga whales. She calls it, quote, disrespectful to these forms of intelligent life, end quote. I'm not sure how I'd feel about that either. Swimming around, minding my own business, people invading my innards. And I don't mean to baffle you with technical terms like innards. About 200 showbiz types signed a letter urging Hollywood to be more responsible when it depicts gun violence on screen. Amy Schumer, Shonda Rhimes, Judd Apatow, Jimmy Kimmel, among those who signed. These movies, you always think of Tom Hanks, especially in Castaway, when he goes from being a fat guy to a really, really skinny guy because he's on an island and he ain't got no food. I love seafood too, but I wouldn't want to eat it every day. And then, of course, you think of Philadelphia, these diets they put these actors on when you either have to gain a lot of weight or lose a lot of weight. Zac Efron didn't have a carb for 6 months when he was shooting Baywatch. Christian Bale, 63 pounds is what he lost for The Machinist. All he ate every day was an apple, a can of tuna, and coffee. Chris Hemsworth lost 33 pounds in 4 weeks for In the Heart of the Sea. He did this by eating only 500 calories a day, one boiled egg, a couple of crackers, and a celery stick. Jared Leto, 28 pounds for Requiem for a Dream. Man, was that an amazing movie. All he did was nibble on raw vegetables. He even started to faint on set. Then he did Chapter 27, where he had to gain 60 pounds, which caused him to get gout. Matt Damon lost 50 pounds to play a heroin addict. In Courage Under Fire, he ate mostly chicken breast and he consumed about 100 calories a day and ran 13 miles a day, ended up damaging his adrenal gland, which took over a year of medication to try to fix. Yeah, see, this stuff is gone overboard with these characters feeling they got to do. Bradley Cooper had to gain weight for American Sniper, 6,000 calories a day, 5 meals, a pre and post workout drink, and energy bars. And when you think about it, it's really stupid because nobody knew what the original guy, the guy he was playing in American Sniper, nobody knew if he was heavy or skinny or short or tall. They could have gotten Jason Alexander to go out there and play that role. Nobody would have known the difference. And then for those of you who've been flocking to the theaters to see Top Gun Maverick, Miles Teller had to gain weight. Let's see, 6 eggs, a shake, 2 lunches, each with a chicken breast, a whole potato, and broccoli, then another snack, and for dinner it'd be 20 ounces of fish or steak. You know that movie Defending Your Life, Albert Brooks, and Meryl Streep, the running joke throughout the movie was, you know, when you die, you go to Judgment City and you can eat anything you want, never gain weight. All right, late night tonight, Dakota Johnson and Carrie Underwood. I'm with Jimmy Fallon. Colbert has got Bob Woodward and Carl Bernstein. They are front and center again. Also, Bonnie Raitt. That's a hell of a show tonight. Chrissy Teigen and there's something. Rose Byrne. Got to be one of the most beautiful actresses in Hollywood. She's on with James Corden tonight. Miles Teller from Top Gun with Seth Meyers and Trevor Noah. It's got Katie Couric. Jennifer Hudson won that Tony the other night. Third youngest EGOT winner. Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony EGOT. Birthdays today, Steffi Graf, 1993. She's out there playing tennis, and a guy runs out of the court and stabs her in the back. I remember we had her on the air just a year or two after that happened, and I said, how do you ever trust anybody again? How do you ever turn your back on anybody? Boy George, 61 today. What a fuck up that guy is. Speaking of which, Donald Trump, 76 today, which is interesting because people who criticize Joe Biden about looking, you know, rickety and old, well, Donald Trump runs in 2024. He'll be older than what Joe Biden is now. Now, I got a couple of things to play for you from Colbert. Here was their cold open the other night. I thought this was extraordinarily creative.
It's the House Select Committee's January 6th hearing.
Except, of course, Fox News.
It's time to find the people who tried to hang Mike Pence. Wait till we like Liz Cheney. Now the world does not make sense.
Why don't we get things started?
I'm the most injurious, not securious, always hideous, most ambitious. This is what we call the Chances
We're following a developing story out of Idaho this morning. 31 people arrested for conspiracy to riot near a pride parade. Police say this group is believed to be affiliated with a hate organization, and they were loaded into a U-Haul truck packing riot gear.
Are you a white supremacist looking to move a group of angry, lonely white men on a budget, but U-Haul's not extreme enough? Then call U-Haul today. At U-Haul, we have the perfect vehicle for your racist moving needs. Want to transport 15 white supremacists to harass a peaceful political protest? Rent our Ku Klux van. And as always, we offer a no ventilation guarantee. Best of all, at U-Haul, returns are easy. No need to even unload your white nationalist cargo. Just drive it into the nearest ravine.
One breakout star returned from night one, former Attorney General and Sith Lord summoning another basket of onion rings, Bill Barr. Bill Barr explained that he never bought Giuliani's fraud theories, as he explicitly told the former president.
I told him that the stuff that his people were shoveling out to the public was bull. I mean, that the claims of fraud were bull. I reiterated that they'd wasted a whole month on these claims on the Dominion voting machines, and they were idiotic claims. I thought, boy, if he really believes this stuff, he has, you know, lost contact he's become detached from reality, if he really believes this stuff.
It's so sad to think that the man who spent years insisting that windmills caused cancer somehow lost touch with reality. So far, my major feeling about these hearings, both Thursday and today, is one of enormous gratitude. We know a lot of this stuff already, but watching them put it together reminds us that we're not crazy. You see, for the past 17 months, the former president and his spineless toadies have been gaslighting us, telling us that we did not see what we all saw, a coup. And it's not like the guy was hiding it ever. In the lead-up, the former president said things like this.
Will you commit to making sure that there is a peaceful transfer of power after the election?
Well, we're going to have to see what happens.
I understand that, but people are rioting. Do you commit to making sure that there's a peaceful transfer of power?
We want to get rid of the ballots, and you'll have a very transfer. We'll have a very peaceful. There won't be a transfer, frankly. There'll be a continuation.
There's your evidence, Your Honor. Exhibit A-hole.
Damn, that is good writing. That is good, good writing. All right, let's shift gears, talk about something else. It was on this date in 1985 that I attended. Actually, I hosted the Phil Collins hot tub party. This was the thing we did at Mississippi Nights, and it was in conjunction with the release of a Phil Collins record, and so we just sat up and glommed onto it somehow. I ended up signing the boob of a woman who just whipped it out and said, here's a magic marker, sign my boob, please. And I did, to the delight of everybody at Mississippi Nights. And moments later, I was approached by a 22-year-old young woman who just walked over and wanted to meet JC. She ended up dating for something like 3.5 years. But as so often happens, she didn't want anything to do with me now. Oh, you know, she's been married like for 30 years. Got a free trip to Washington, D.C. on this date back in 1996. Denzel Washington movie called Courage Under Fire. Pretty good movie, but it starred Meg Ryan as a helicopter pilot. I wasn't sure many of us bought into that. 1999, I began my very first of two stints at KTRS Radio. I was on the morning show with Wendy Weiss, Don Johnson, and Dan Dierdorf. There were, shall we say, ego issues involved in that show. I only spent about 53 days there, but who's counting? When I walked out of that place after the 53 days, I never saw Dan Dierdorf again. Still haven't. And in 1991, on this date, things really changed. I mean, this was a seminal moment for the St. Louis concert scene. There's a thread going on Facebook right now about why St. Louis isn't getting the quality concerts that it used to get. And they're blaming the promoters. And I guess that's just it. You know, something happens and people don't like you. You immediately start looking for somebody to blame. I don't know that the promoters are the problem here, because the promotion companies, like Live Nation, are looking at numbers. When I moved to St. Louis in 1984, we were market number 18. St. Louis is now market number 26. And I can tell you, this whole thing, we fell out of the top 20 while we were doing the K-Hits morning show, because we will never forget it, because all of a sudden, a lot of access to like nationally known acts, and you know, there are promotion companies that feed us guests, and they just look at the top 20 markets. It's nothing personal. It's a numbers game. You're not in the top 20. That's what they deal with, the top 20 markets. You fall out of the top 20, and that's it. You know, it affects everything. And, you know, concert promotion is one of those things. But back in 1991, you know, St. Louis didn't have an outdoor concert venue, but that all changed. And so I proposed an idea. I said, let's cover this thing like it's the Super Bowl or something. So we got Alan Barklage in the helicopter, and then Lori Light, a photographer for Channel 5, a friend of mine for a long time. And the three of us went up in the helicopter, and we had prearranged to have Mark Close, Drew Johnson, all of the guys we had on the air at the time. And this was, we were at the river. And so, I don't know, it was like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I went up in the helicopter and I sort of anchored this thing. And now let's go down to Mark Close. He's got the story of this. And now let's go to Drew Johnson to get the story on this. And of course, we could see the traffic situation developing. If you'll recall, back in 1991, there was a lot of curiosity and even a bit of skepticism about how bad the traffic would be going in and out of there. And of course, then there was nothing out there except the concert venue, all those hotels and restaurants, and, you know, Dave and Buster's and all of that stuff out there. None of it was there in 1991. It was just flat as a pancake. There were people who were concerned that Riverport would flood if, you know, the river there overflowed, but they did a pretty good job, I think, of engineering the whole place. And none of the stuff that they thought was going to happen, you know, all the doomsdayers, you know, nothing happened. The only bad thing that happened was that Axl Rose went apeshit and, you know, his fans tore the place apart. You know, Steve Shankman and Irv Zuckerman, the founders of Contemporary Productions, the people who put on, oh, the overwhelming majority of concerts going all the way back to the late 70s. I remember talking to Irv the morning after this thing at Riverport happened with Axl Rose. Wow, was he hot. You could have fried an egg on Irv's forehead. And for good reason, too. Because you had people yanking seats out of their fixtures. You had, you know, people, you know, the plants, the trees, people just uprooting the stuff and tearing the place apart. That's why I was a little bit surprised. Well, I was more than a little bit surprised. I was really surprised. A couple of years ago when Axl Rose came back in with Guns N' Roses to play the Dome, and people sort of welcomed him with open arms. You got to remember, he's, you know, after all this happened, and then they filed the lawsuits and criminal charges, and he's got to come back to St. Louis, you know, wearing his little pink suit. But he's on stage while all this is going on, wearing a t-shirt that says St. Louis sucks. He did that for years. Oh, but now the band is coming back, and oh, we love him now. What the fuck? But anyhow, dig into the archives here. 1991 on this date.
Corcoran, high above the Riverport Amphitheater on opening night. We're going to be here for the 93 minutes to Riverport. Alan Barklage, the greatest American hero, at the controls, along with Libby Cochin, our executive morning show producer, and Lori Light, who is going to be providing Channel 5 news in just a few minutes with a live shot of the traffic situation here.
I'm Executive Vice President Irv Zuckerman, and we're co-owners. Steve and I are co-owners and always have been of Contemporary Productions. Well, obviously, whenever you're putting something together that takes this long, the last minute seems like about a year, but all day today, it's just been going so nicely that I've just been kind of waiting for 8 o'clock. We're ready to play some music, we're ready to party, we're ready to kick Riverport off. And actually, at this point, I'm not only serene, I'm dizzy because I'm following JC in the helicopter and I'm starting to fall over.
Guys, I was just curious as to whether or not you're expecting a huge walk-up tonight.
Well, it's hard to tell, JC, but we've had a good walk-up all day long. We've sold several hundred tickets today, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot of people coming out tonight to buy tickets, and we encourage them to come out. We got plenty of room on the lawn tonight. Tickets are available at the box office. We don't see any major traffic problem at this time, and we encourage people to come on out.
Well, we just, my job is mainly when they come in, make sure our guys are doing what they're supposed to do, and they've got Very Lights in today. It was really special. I mean, those are really nice lights.
Well, what are Very Lights for everybody that doesn't know?
Well, it's the company out of Texas, and they're the lights you see that do anything you want them to do, any color, just about any color. Patterns, they move. I mean, it's amazing what they do. Yeah, they're like the neatest thing ever to come into lighting.
In a little while, we're going to check in with Mark Close down on the ground, who's going to kind of take a look at some of the similar venues around the Midwest. There are many of these outdoor venues spread all over the country. We're going to kind of compare those to what we have out here at Riverport. And also, Mark is going to take a fond look back at the old days at the Mississippi River Festival. Don't forget now, this is a big weekend, not just tonight with Steve Winwood and the Robert Cray Band featuring the Memphis Horns, but tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, Mannheim Steamroller Chip Davis, who was a guest on the Breakfast Club not too long ago, and his 50-piece orchestra, the Fresh Air Concert in the Fresh Air tomorrow night at Riverport, starting at 8 o'clock. As far as Steve Winwood is concerned tonight, we expect him to start with I'm a Man. Later on, you'll hear songs like While You See a Chance, the Low Spark of High Heeled Boys, and won't that be exciting to hear a live version of that? Also, Medicated Goo, Feeling All Right, Roll With It, Higher Love, and Gimme Some Lovin', all of those on the playlist for Steve Winwood tonight out here at Riverport. We'll check in live.
Hey, JC, they've opened the gates just
there
now.
There they go. 6:41 on Friday, June 14th, out here at the Riverport Amphitheater. They open the gates, and in they go.
We're talking to the very first people through the gates of the Riverport Amphitheater, and this is Chris and Wendy Black. Chris, where are you from? What do you do?
From St. Charles. We own Cafe Beignet.
We just wanted to get the best seat on the lawn.
That's wow. True. And now I got you over here, and
I know,
it's going to...
I can't believe it.
And now it's going to fill up, and you're going to get the worst seat.
I know.
When you come to the pavilion here at Riverport, you may see some of those private boxes down close to the stage. Those will be served by waitresses, similar to the way the private boxes work at the arena and also Busch Stadium. However, Steve Shankman from Contemporary Productions told me yesterday that with about 48 hours notice, they can have any kind of food you want ready for you and your guests in these boxes. See if you can stump them, but you got to get your hands on one of the boxes first. Some of the inhabitants of those private boxes include Channel 5 and Channel 30, Anheuser-Busch, Pepsi, a law firm or two.
We welcome to the Breakfast Club Sunil Sinha, who is production manager out of Riverport. Welcome.
Thank you. Wonderful night. Terrific night.
You would think that this absolutely would be the state-of-the-art place.
It is. What they've done is they've corrected everything that was a mistake or something that was not fully done in all the other facilities. And with the architect, design architect, who's been involved, I think, 5 or 7 of these, they corrected all these things that they wanted to. And this is incredible. Wonderful.
Now, what about the artist's reaction to some of this? You know, Wynwood, I talked to his manager a little while ago. He was flying a kite. Yeah. And
They loved it. They came in here and they said, this is great. This is incredible. For production, it's wonderful. Easy.
J.C. Corcoran, sending it downstairs to Mark Close.
Thanks, J.C. Appreciate it. Here with the opening of the Riverport, a lot of comparison going on with some of the other amphitheaters throughout the country. In mine, Pine Knob up in Detroit, Michigan, holds about 14,000 people outside of Chicago's Poplar Creek at 22.5. And then outside Cleveland, Cleveland, Ohio, is the Blossom Music Center at about 18,000 people. But I guess if you're going to do a comparison, everybody in the St. Louis area always goes back kind of to the granddaddy of them all. And that would have to be the Mississippi River Festival. And some great memories from those days. And that was kind of B.C. That was before Corcoran, if you can imagine that. The first concert happened way back in June 20th, 1969, and that was the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. The first kind of rock or folk show happened with Buffy St. Marie, June 23rd. Again, that was 1969, and whatever it went through on trivia a little bit earlier today, the reason that MRF came about was a summer home for the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, and for the first summer, they played 18 performances there, and about 12 of the contemporary acts came about afterwards. So again, the start was June 20th, 1969, with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. Buffy St. Marie was the first pop/folk performer on June 23rd from 1969. The last performance happened on August 23rd of 1980, and that was ZZ Top. I got a lot of this information from the director of MRF, the Mississippi River Festival, a gentleman by the name of Lyle Ward from 1970 through 79. You'll probably remember back, we were talking about this this week on trivia. The largest attendance ever at MRF was for The Who, 1971. 33,000 people showed up for that show. Wishbone Ash was the opening act. There were shows interrupted due to the weather. In fact, in 1970, some tornado winds blew in, snapped some poles on the tent. Nobody was hurt. Waited a few minutes, and the show went on. To give you an idea of the times and going back to 1969, ticket prices at the Mississippi River Festival, and you're going to love this, the reserve seats under the tent were $6.50, and the lawn seats were $2. Of course, back then you could get gas at 19 cents a gallon, too. Some of the acts that performed throughout the years at the Mississippi River Festival, Iron Butterfly, Janis Joplin, Arlo Guthrie, Richie Havens, The Grateful Dead, Chicago, The Guess Who, Ike and Tina Turner, Chuck Berry, David Cassidy, one of my favorites, Blood, Sweat, and Tears. And the year that Harry Chapin came in late, he missed his flight out of New York, took a private jet in, went to the airport, called up a guy by the name of Alan Barklage, who flew him in to the Mississippi River Festival. I'm sure Alan remembers that. And did you stay for the show, Alan, or did you just, you flew back?
I just flew back.
Okay, good for you.
Didn't stay for the show. Are you kidding? It was so hard to find a place to land out there. You know, they set it up. They said, okay, they'll have some players where they want me to land. Well, that got out to the audience, and everybody out there had some kind of a fire burning. I had no idea where to land this guy.
They were barbecuing, Alan. They were all having their Q-pits going, and it got pretty intense. But that was some of the great shows that went about in there. And again, it kind of came to an end in 1980. But SIU folks ran it from 69 through 77 with some incredible shows and some great memories over the Mississippi River Festival at SIU. And we've got opening night here at Riverport. I'm sure many great memories to come in the very near future. It's Mark Close reporting live from Riverport.
A couple of facts and figures to throw at you. Riverport is a $15 million concert facility on approximately 500 acres of land here in Maryland Heights. The stage and pavilion area cover about 50,000 square feet of open area, unobstructed by any columns. There is nothing to get in your way. The stage and the pavilion structure were made of recycled steel here in 1991. That's of interest to a lot of people. And the roof structure is designed to support about 75,000 pounds of lighting, sound equipment, etc. The general contractor, Speardrip Building Corporation, and Ben Hur Construction both did a great job. Thanks to Kevin Bloom with Nucor Building Systems for the stats. There are about 7,000 pavilion seats. Those were sold a long time ago. Another 13,000 lawn seats are filling up as we speak. Opening night at Riverport, Robert Cray and Steve Winwood, of course, Mannheim Steamroller with their 50-piece orchestra out here at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. That about does it from the helicopter. We will see you on the ground. Again, congratulations to Irv Zuckerman and Steve Shankman.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.